This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The last two major U.S. Democratic presidential candidates, former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, debated in an empty TV studio with supporters limited to watching the debate on television because of coronavirus concerns. The viral outbreak was the top of the agenda for Sunday's debate, with each candidate laying out what he would do if he were president during such a crisis. Sanders, who has been pushing a single-payer health care system, has said that his plan would provide free treatment for those afflicted with the coronavirus. Biden said he would authorize government funding to pay for the treatment. Each candidate said he would campaign for the other if their own bid for the nomination failed. Biden said that if he gets the Democratic nomination, he will pick a woman for running mate. Sanders said he would in all likelihood pick a woman. Sanders and Biden are competing for the Democratic presidential nomination to face Republican President Donald Trump in November's national election. The governor in the U.S. state of Illinois is announcing a drastic step to help contain the spread of the coronavirus. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Illinois' governor is heeding the warning from federal health officials who say Americans really need to hunker down more to help slow the spread of the coronavirus to not overwhelm the medical system. So J.B. Pritzker announced a major step to keep people home.
I am ordering all bars and restaurants in the state of Illinois to close to the public as of the close of business Monday night.
Earlier, he blasted the Trump administration because of long lines of returning international passengers at O'Hare Airport, where some 3,000 people were crammed together in the customs area. Very close contact that's discouraged for health safety. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And this is VOA News. A top Sudanese general Sunday said his country would mediate a deal on an escalating dispute between Ethiopia and Egypt over Ethiopia's controversial dam on the Nile River. The deputy head of Sudan's Sovereign Council said that his country would work to bridge the gap and reach an agreement in the years-long dispute. These remarks came at the end of a two-day visit to Cairo, where he met with the Egyptian president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, as Sudan sits between the Egypt and Ethiopia area along the Nile's route. U.S. President Trump is considering pardoning former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his dealings with Russia's ambassador before President Trump took office. The former National Security Advisor tried to withdraw that guilty plea in January, accusing federal prosecutors of acting in bad faith, breaking their bargain with him by seeking prison time. The judge has rejected the charges of misconduct, and prosecutors have questioned whether Flynn truly accepts guilt. But in a tweet, the president cited an unspecified report that the Justice Department has lost records related to Flynn's case and said he's strongly considering a full pardon, prompting Flynn's lawyer to tweet back, "Thank you, Mr. President." Ben Thomas, Washington.
At least 15 people died Sunday after an explosion at a gas processing plant in a suburb of Lagos, Nigeria, according to the country's emergency services. Nigeria's National Petroleum Corporation said that the explosion was triggered after a truck hit some gas cylinders at a processing plant near the corporation's pipeline. The impact of the explosion led to the collapse of about 50 nearby homes and damaged the pipeline badly enough to cause a temporary halt to the operations, according to the oil company. An official with National Emergency Management said several people were injured and taken to hospitals. Israeli opposition leader Benny Gantz will be given the first opportunity to form a new government, according to Israel's president. Gantz, the leader of Israel's Blue and White Party, received 61 votes, mandating that President Reuven Rivlin allow Gantz to appoint a speaker from his party and begin pushing legislation. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party received the most votes in the March elections, the third set of elections over the course of 1 year, but he failed to receive the support of enough allies in parliament to give his party control. Gantz will now have a month to form a coalition. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, March 16th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Does the Zimbabwe government agree that the coronavirus is a punishment for the U.S. and Europe for imposing sanctions on Zimbabwe?
Sanctions are real because if we don't have good medical facilities, it will be very difficult then to have our own general public access the best there is in the medical fraternity to cure people.
Paul Magwana is the Secretary for Legal Affairs of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. Kenya closes learning institutions and bans court proceedings because of the coronavirus. Malawi's president to soon name a new cabinet. And three West African leaders are expected to visit Guinea-Conakry tomorrow, Tuesday.
Those leaders are going to call upon the president, followers, and the opposition to go around the table and see how we can avoid violence in Guinea. And this is what we're looking for. On the opposition side.
Faya Milimuno is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution in Guinea and was causing the massive deaths of vultures in Guinea-Bissau. Those stories plus Samson Omale Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's defense minister, Opa Muchinguri, has reportedly said that the coronavirus pandemic is a punishment for the U.S. and Europe for imposing sanctions on some members of the ruling ZANU-PF party. According to the Associated Press, Muchinguri was addressing a rally on Saturday in the northern town of Chinhoya. Paul Magwana, Secretary for Legal Affairs of the ruling ZANU-PF party, would not say whether the defense minister was right, but he says it will be difficult for Zimbabwe to effectively fight the coronavirus in the face of biting sanctions.
Coronavirus is a serious pandemic, and every government is busy trying to alert its people to take heed to the instructions and directives we are getting from our medical fraternity on how to prevent the spread of this plague among our own people. We are very serious about taking precautions to make sure that our people don't contract this virus, because we are already under a severe shortage of some of these drugs. And if we don't take precautions, then we'll have lots of lives lost.
Is it fair to say that the government maybe does not share the views expressed or reportedly expressed by Defense Minister Chinhoye?
All I'm saying is when we're talking about sanctions, sanctions are real. They've got their own toll on our population, because if we don't have good medical facilities, you know, it will be very difficult then to have our own general public access the best there is in the medical fraternity to cure people. So all I can say is this is a very serious plague which every country should be worried about, because losing a single soul in a given state should be a concern to those in leadership.
Everything aside from what the defense minister allegedly said, it seems to me that the issue of the Western sanctions is still really something that Zimbabwe is concerned about.
Zimbabwe is concerned about that because, look, we are the only country, I think, outside Iran, Russia, who cannot access loans from financial institutions like the IMF and the World Bank, so that we can also get that balance of payment support, which every country is enjoying under the sun. You know very well that for the past 2 decades, we've been reeling under those sanctions and we could not recapitalize our industries. We have been disadvantaged for the past 2 decades to access to foreign funding, you know. So it will be very difficult for us to seize medicines, because now, you know, it has been very difficult now to survive under those circumstances.
As I was saying, there are some Zimbabwe students studying in China, and they were, I think some of them were quarantined. I listened to one of the interviews our colleagues in the Zimbabwe service did. And one of the students were appealing to the government of Zimbabwe to help them, to make sure that they get food and everything. So what is your government doing about Zimbabweans in China?
The Chinese government has guaranteed us that they will look after those students. So we are not worried because, as you know, China is the second biggest economy in the world. They can't lack to look after those few students who are there. They've assured the Zimbabwean government that they will take care of them. And the communication we are getting from the embassy and from our students, they are saying all is well, they are happy, and they think this phenomenon will pass, and then they will go back to normal life.
Paul Magwana is the Secretary for Legal Affairs of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Kenya has locked down all learning institutions starting today, Monday, and advised employers to allow employees to work from home after reporting three cases of the deadly coronavirus. Addressing the media yesterday, Sunday, President Uhuru Kenyatta said the move will help reduce the chances of the virus spreading. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the Kenya judiciary has also suspended court proceedings until further notice.
The deadly coronavirus was first reported in Kenya on Friday last week after a patient who had traveled from the United States via London tested positive of the virus. The Kenyan government says upon tracking her movement, more than 20 people have been isolated and two more positive cases reported. The two are said to have sat with her in the plane from London to Nairobi. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta directed all learning institutions closed starting today, Monday, as well as public gatherings, among them church and funeral services, as a way of reducing the number of infections.
We have received confirmation of two more cases of the coronavirus. The two have tested positive as a result of coming into contact with the first patient. We have suspended learning in all our education institutions with immediate effect. Government offices, businesses, and companies are encouraged to allow employees to work from home, with the exception of employees working in critical or essential services.
Kenya had earlier, before the case was detected, allowed flights to land at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, especially flights that came from corona-affected countries, claiming the government was prepared to handle the pandemic. And in his speech, Mr. Kenyatta says all flights are suspended and only Kenyan nationals will be allowed in the country.
The government is suspending travel for all persons coming into Kenya from any country with reported coronavirus cases. Only Kenyan citizens and foreigners with valid residence permits will be allowed to come in, provided they proceed on self-quarantine or to a government-designated quarantine facility. This will take effect within the next 48 hours to cater for any passengers who may be en route. This directive will remain in effect for the next 30 days.
On the other hand, Supreme Court Judge David Maraga has suspended all court proceedings across the country for 14 days with no open case appearances.
We shall forthwith scale down court activities throughout the country for a period of 2 weeks starting tomorrow, the 16th of March, in order to allow for further consultations and design appropriate measures to prevent the spread of the virus. During this period, prisoners and the remandees will not be brought to court. With regard to new arrests, all cases except serious ones will be dealt with at the police station in accordance with the guidelines to be issued by the Inspector General of Police.
The government is still on the run to have all the people who got in contact with the first patient for isolation. However, Kenya's move to lock down businesses and companies after the discovery of the three cases may affect the economy, since most Kenyans live below poverty level and most of them are casual laborers. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika is suspected to name a new cabinet soon. This after he dissolved cabinet on Friday. It also followed a recent alliance between his ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, and the opposition United Democratic Front, the UDF, ahead of the much-anticipated May 19 presidential election rerun. Vincent Kondwe, a political analyst, tells viewers Peter Clotty that President Mutharika's expected cabinet will be named with an eye on the upcoming election.
All right, so the president has dissolved cabinet with the expectation that he will announce a new cabinet following the alliance with the UDF. So if I may ask you, what are your thoughts about the dissolution of cabinet and the new cabinet that the president is soon to assemble?
Given the political dynamics that are happening, and in view that the Constitutional Court said that the winning candidate must acquire the 50% plus one, which is an absolute majority. And the DPP went into an alliance with the UDF, as you've rightly put it. Now, the dissolution of cabinet in view of the working alliance with the UDF, I think we should expect a cabinet that is going to serve the political interest of the UDF as a political party and as a marriage partner of the DPP. So this would be a highly political cabinet. Well, one can say that the cabinet is always political, but to a larger extent, it taps in maybe the expertise of the persons. But this one definitely is going to look more at the political value that the individuals that are going to be appointed into the cabinet are going to bring to the electoral alliance, so that the DPP can go into the fresh elections with a lot of influence and the political capitalization of the individuals that are going to be appointed in the cabinet.
So whatever happens to Vice President Saulos Chilima, he is not part of the alliance. He has formed an alliance with the main opposition party, the Malawi Congress Party. But the Constitution also says that the Vice President has to be in the cabinet by law. So wouldn't the president be violating the Constitution if he doesn't include Saulos Chilima in his cabinet, despite the political fallout or the personal fallout between the two gentlemen?
You see, the vice president is a member of the cabinet through the operation of the law. So whether President Mutharika substantively gives him a ministerial portfolio or not, by virtue of the vice presidency being a member of the cabinet through the operation of the Constitution, he remains the member of cabinet. Now, it's the prerogative of President Mutharika to appoint cabinet ministers to become members of the cabinet. So he can either give him certain ministerial duties or not. That is a presidential prerogative. So he will not break any law whether he gives him a ministerial position or not. But by virtue of being the vice president, he remains a member of the cabinet through the operation of the Constitution.
Malawi political analyst Vincent Kondwe was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. Today's Monday, March 16th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Three West African leaders, the presidents of Nigeria, Niger, and Ghana, and probably Burkina Faso, are expected to visit Guinea tomorrow, Tuesday. This comes as the country is experiencing political turmoil because of President Alpha Conde's decision to organize a controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary elections. The opposition says Mr. Conde is trying to seek a third term. Faya Milimuno is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution. He says the West African leaders will likely call on President Conde and the opposition to find a solution to the political crisis that would avoid violence.
The purpose is, why a new constitution if it is not an opportunity to Alpha Conde to seek a short term? Those leaders are going to call upon the president, his followers, and the opposition to go around the table and see how we can avoid violence in Guinea. And it is what we're looking for on the opposition side. And in the past, when the religious leaders asked us to, stop any demonstration, we did it for 10 days. It was Alpha Conde refusing even to meet with those registration leaders. So everybody knows here in Guinea on which side is violence are coming from.
So suppose the African leaders ask you which way to avoid the violence in Guinea, what would be the opposition response?
The only way we can avoid violence in Guinea is first to stop that process of referendum and that process of election, because if many political parties didn't go to those legislative elections, it is because we said it, and it is true that the registry was completely corrupted. Now that everybody knows that the registry is completely corrupted, why can we sit down and see how that can be corrected and take time to correct before going to election? If that happens, we are sure that nothing violent is going to happen. But if they're forced to go to election, this country will face trouble.
The last time we spoke, your team was going to Abuja to attend the opening of this ECOWAS Court of Justice. What was the outcome there? Well, I mean, how did the hearing go?
It went well, and the court has decided to make the ruling on Thursday again, the 19th. On the 19th, we're going to know the first decision about the case.
What exactly is this case about?
The case is about the violation of the ECOWAS Protocol, which is like the constitution of the 15 countries of the ECOWAS region. Basically, in that protocol, it is a violation when one tried to change the constitution to confiscate power. Since October, we have lost about 42 people, and about 36 of them were killed by bullets. All those killings cannot be happening in one of the ECOWAS countries. So it is against the protocol of ECOWAS. So there are precise things we have submitted to the court to rule on them.
Faya Milimuno is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution in Guinea. You're speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. At least 1,000 vultures have died, and it is believed that most, if not all of them, are hooded vultures, which are endangered. The numbers might rise, says the Vulture Conservation Foundation Director Jose Tavares. He tells Ricky Schreier the incident is the worst vulture mortality incident in the world in recent history.
We still believe that poisoning is the most probable cause of this mortality, even though we are keeping our options open, and there could be eventually, although it is unlikely, you know, some sort of disease. A couple of researchers have suggested, for example, avian influenza. But the information that we get from the field, the fact that some of the birds were, you know, bubbling from their beaks, they were seeking water, and so on, these are very common symptoms of poison, and the fact that the mortality occurred all at once in a couple of nucleus or focus areas also suggests poisoning. But we don't know because no analysis have been done. So therefore, we need to keep our options open. Generally speaking, with vultures, poisoning is the major factor of mortality all over the world, and poisoning occurs in Africa along three different formats or three different lines. One of them is poisoning due to human-wildlife conflict, in which the vultures are the collateral victims of such poisoning. So vultures are not the intended victims. Yeah. Then in Africa, and very specifically to Africa, there are two other types of poisoning, what we call sentinel poisoning, and this is associated with poaching of elephant and rhino. Now, this is not likely in Guinea-Bissau, because Guinea-Bissau doesn't have any elephants or rhino.
Are there tests going on in country with a local with the local park authorities?
Yes, so we indeed have been engaging with them, with EBAP and with the Ministry of Agriculture and the veterinary services. They've reacted actually very, very quickly. Teams were sent out to the field, and they've incinerated several hundred of the vultures that were found dead. So they've done that. You know, there was obviously some worry about public health impacts of this. The problem, the only problem is that, and unfortunately not enough samples were collected.
What are the next steps?
Well, the next steps is if indeed vulture corpses are collected, and we hope that they are being collected and frozen, what we would like to do is we'd like to send a mission to Guinea-Bissau, and not only to the field to try to find a little bit more information about exactly the details of the poisoning, but also including an avian pathologist that could perform post-mortems and eventually take the samples to a lab abroad where they can be properly analyzed. Unfortunately, there is no such lab in country.
That was Jose Tavares, the Vulture Conservation Foundation director. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Portugal. It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sportsing, here is something. Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the latest news on how coronavirus is affecting sports on the continent. Medical experts at the Confederation of African Football were in Cameroon this past weekend to assess the measures taken by Cameroon to combat the coronavirus pandemic. The country is set to host the 2020 edition of the African Nations Championships, the competition exclusively for locally based players from the 4th to the 25th of April. Cameroon has reported several cases of the coronavirus. The pandemic has forced the cancellation of almost all major sporting events and leagues around the world. On Friday, CAF postponed the back-to-back rounds of the 2021 African Cup of Nations qualifiers, which were set to be held in late March. However, the CHAN still has the green light to go ahead, with a CAF statement explaining that a delegation will assess the preventive measures taken by the local organizing committee. So how do fans on the African continent react to the devastating effect of the coronavirus on sports?
A human life first. Our lives first. After that, other things can follow. I think I took the line of the CAF, that is the people that run football in Africa. I think they've told the normal line by suspending leagues, also the qualifiers. We can't put people's life at stake because of our football. I think it's the right decision by CAF.
For now, it's not safe for the crowd and mostly for the player they've served.
We just hope that it's contained on time before we expand the calendar and we don't get a lot of postponement for other major competitions.
And now to women's football news. Victories at home during Saturday's second leg matches of the second round of the African qualifiers for the FIFA Under-17 Women's World Cup India 2020 was enough for five teams to book their place at the final round. Cameroon, Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa and Uganda sealed their spots in style as the continental journey to India reaches the final lap. In Yaounde, the female under-17 national team proved too hot to handle for Sao Tome and Príncipe with a 6-0 win and a 10-0 aggregate victory. Ghana's Black Maidens completed a double over their Liberian counterparts with an 8-0 victory in Accra. The Ghanaians had earlier won 2-0 in Monrovia. Nigeria continued their flourishing campaign for a ticket to India with a 5-1 home win against their Guinean counterparts at the Agege Stadium in Lagos. Victory secured the Flamingos' passage with an emphatic 11-2 aggregate win following their 6-1 first leg win last week in Conakry. Elsewhere in Johannesburg, South Africa overturned a 2-0 loss from the first leg with a 3-0 win against neighbors Zambia to progress. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. That's it for this Monday, March 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good day.
Great music can come from anywhere.
This is Africa.
This week on Border Crossings, we are going to be counting down 10 different musicians from 10 different countries around the world. We could be more than just part-time lovers. Tune in on Tuesday, March 17th at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
on the next Stray Dog Africa. 25 years ago, the international community convened in an attempt to create a world where men and women are equal. A discussion on women's equality on the continent on the next Stray Dog Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.